Okay, are you recording, sir? Okay, good morning, everybody. We are at the revision today for the ITE1 final exam. This is going to be a joint effort by Kerry and I. We would advise you to pay attention to what we're saying, because we are trying to give you a heads up on what you may come across in the final exam and what areas you should revise. Some of you, I believe, have already completed the final exam, but for those who haven't, you've got a little heads up here. You will have 3 hours for the final exam. So you shouldn't have to rush. There is 50 questions, and that gives you a reasonable amount of time to review. Please read your instructions at the beginning of the final exam carefully. And the biggest advice I can give to you, apart from wishing you all well, the biggest advice I can give to you is to please read and reread your questions. Have a look if it says choose one, choose two, choose three. If you don't read the question properly and you don't answer the number of answers they wish you to answer, you will get it wrong. So it is all multiple choice. There will be diagram descriptions, but they will be emailed to you when the exam is put up. The exam only goes up for 8 hours at a time. So for those, I know some people have expressed an interest to do it this afternoon. Once you let us know that you wish to do the exam, we will then post the exam and then email you the diagram descriptions. So today really is just a heads up on what's in the exam, and that's just because we're nice little people and want to give you a little bit of an overview.
Just something to add
Kevin.
in there. If a question says pick two and you pick three, you get zero.
That's right. So, and do read your questions carefully and the answers carefully, because some of the answers are very close, but there's only one correct one, and you'll be right or you'll be wrong. So, do make sure that you read and reread your questions so that you do understand it.
If you're using JAWS version 8 and Internet Exploiter 7, we found that the safest way to actually check boxes and make sure that the correct boxes are checked is to arrow down to the box you want checked, press Enter to exit to enter forms mode. That will also check the box you are on. Then press numpad plus to drop back into virtual cursor, PC cursor. Then use your arrow keys to navigate up and down to ensure that the radio button that you intended to be checked was checked. Now you get 2 shots at the final exam. It probably wasn't important if you only got, and the pass mark is 75 on either sit. It's only us instructors that get penalised if we get it wrong the first time. Also, to keep in mind that when you actually do that exam, it may not have been important to make sure that the right boxes were checked in your chapter exams, because you can sit those up to 3 or 4 times. But the extra time invested to make sure that the right box that you expect to be checked in the final is actually checked is certainly worth doing. You can also use place markers to make sure that you can. That you can jump back to the question that you're on in JAWS if you are using Internet Explorer 7. We have found Internet Explorer 6 to be more reliable and stable and predictable in its operation than Internet Explorer 7, but quite a number of you could be using good old Missy 7, so be aware of that.
Just before we
Just before we
Kitty,
Sorry, I was just going to say, did you have any questions?
sorry. The key for getting into form mode in NVDA is to press the F key twice, isn't
Ian
it?
has connected.
No idea. Don't use NVDA.
Ian has joined the channel.
However, I think there's a quick start document that will probably tell you what all the keys are. I will look into it, but I haven't downloaded NVDA 0.5 yet, and there have been significant changes. So, sorry, no idea.
Not in the quick...
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you post those key combinations, if you wouldn't mind, to the discussion list, please?
Yeah, people should have been using them all throughout the course, though, shouldn't they? I will post them.
You don't know them now. I don't know how you got here.
I will post them. However, I'm not saying that I won't, but No. Well, okay, I'll post them. People should have been dropping in and out of forms mode all the way through here.
Actually, with the exams, just hitting space on the button in question always worked anyway.
We had a problem with that.
It's always worked here. That's JAWS 6.2 and Exploder 6. That's fine.
Yeah,
it
Exploder
works.
6, it works in... Yeah. Exploder 6 works fine, but the incompatibilities I'm talking about occur with Explorer 7.
Maybe what we need to do is give them a virtual machine they can do the exam on 6.
Well, they could do that. They've got a virtual machine with Internet Explorer 6 in it.
It probably worked better.
But yes, I will post the the key combinations to get in and out of forms mode and those sorts of things. And may I also recommend that people have a listen to Surfs Up, which is the tutorial on how to surf the internet with JAWS. I think it was one done by Jonathan Mosen for Freedom Science Scientific. You guys can certainly have a look at that in the next couple of weeks, especially when we're on holidays. There's all sorts of Internet Explorer hotkeys that you probably don't even know exist that will make your life infinitely easier, such as D to jump to a different element, F to jump to a form field, E to jump to an edit box, C to jump to a combo box. I won't summarise them all on the Cavi announce list because they are all in JAWS Help and they can be extracted from there. And there are utilities that will tear CHM files into their component files if you really need to rip the information out of JAWS Help and stick it in another format.
Okay.
In fact, we might even already have that resource. We'll look into that. I'll talk to somebody who may have that, and we'll see if we can make that available to you if you do have trouble accessing Help files. Next semester you will be making extensive use of Windows Help because that's where all the help me information is. So if you're not good at arrowing down to topics, hitting enter and then pressing F6 and stuff, there's something to practice on the holidays.
I'm good at it. George doesn't give you very much feedback when you're doing things.
Yeah, it does. I can give you a hand with that later. When you press F6, it will actually drop you into a virtual buffer, which has the topic that you want highlighted in that virtual buffer.
Yeah, true. It's just not as much as I'd want.
Oh, look, I'll email Freedom Scientific for you and see if we can get a message in there that says, "Thank you, Graham. You have selected a topic. Now consider pressing F6.
Yeah, I'm sure Eric will jump on that one right away.
So before we progress any further, does anyone else have any questions in regarding to like the format of the exam, any of the things you need to know just on the layout of the exam, etc., before we move on to overview?
Okay, well, how detailed is it going to be with regard to specific stuff like IIQ? Maps and addresses, IO addresses and that sort of stuff?
There is one question, I believe, on IRQs and there is one question on IO addresses. However, the questions in are particularly generic. Without actually giving you one of the questions, I would say that they refer to the actual locations of ports on the machine, such as serial or parallel.
Okay.
There may be a question on DMA channels. However, the DMA question, if it's in there, I honestly can't remember, is for a very commonly used device that you would probably know the DMA channel to. It's a very common device.
I believe there is one in there.
I'll have a browse through it then, just to make sure.
A lot of the questions are fairly generic in nature. There are some questions that are certainly doozies, but there aren't sort of questions that say, please specify the 307th instruction in the award BIOS version 4.50G and justify the jump instruction that follows that piece of code. They do sort of say, you know, pick two things that are common to a printer, or what two things are true about, fixing monitors, and you've got to pick the things that are true. So there's a bit of true false stuff, and there's also which interrupt is that, which IO port is that, and that sort of thing.
So we're hoping that this morning you'll get a good heads up anyway on roughly what to
which brand of anti-static wrist strap do you own?
Okay, any other questions? I think you had one, Anthony.
Anyone got any other questions?
All right, so I guess some of our advice would be to review LANs and WANs. You will get some questions in that area. I think Kerry's going to do a quick overview for you of each of these go along. You'll need to know the difference between a LAN and a WAN. Yes,
definitely LANs and WANs. Definitely LANs and WANs. And it would be useful to know a little bit about, in general terms, about broadband technologies that have been deployed.
Yes.
And especially that's sort of your wide area network sort of stuff. Generally, what's hot and what's not. And also to know how you connect PCs to networks, what you'd use to do that. And possibly what sort of things those devices do, in very broad terms.
Preventative maintenance is going to be something you'll need to know about. Also the hardware layout on your computer.
Oh, my computer's just decided to stop talking. I'm sure I'm still in Acrobat.
Hardware and software issues. You'll need to be able to sort of talk about troubleshooting, which we did a fair bit on last week. I would suggest that another area to review would be ESD. Because that's going to be covered. Again, I guess the other things I would suggest to you would be to make sure you know the different types of RAID and their use in the computer systems configuration.
Does anybody want us to recap that?
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
All right. Yeah, all right. There is a an article on Wikipedia, which is redundant array of inexpensive disk drives. However, I will recap the main levels of RAID. Adobe Acrobat has finally decided to shut itself down after about 35 seconds. Has anybody else had incredible problems, well, more than usual, with Adobe Acrobat 8.1? It's hideous.
haven't installed it.
I stuck with 7.
Is Adobe Acrobat 8.1 available? No, I still have 7.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't There's be been upgrading long buffer anytime delays. Soon, Anthony.
There's been long buffer delays for sure, Kerry.
Well, the other thing is once you hit Alt-F4, it sort of shakes the whole machine to pieces while it does horrible things to your memory allocation, then it finally shuts itself down. Although last time it took my whole machine with it, so I think I might revert. That was actually vaguely relevant because the exam was in a PDF document, but now we're back on track. RAID 0. RAID 0, think of 0 as in zero redundancy. If one of your drive dies, you are absolutely 100% toasted, cooked, fried, baked, boiled, broiled, and dead. Because you've striped data across hard drives, there is no redundancy at all. RAID 0, zero redundancy, you've got no hope, zero redundancy. RAID 1, we'll get it back off the other one. Because RAID 1 is where we mirror it across drives.
Can you make that a bit more clearer?
Well, RAID 0, null, nada, nipped, not a thing, absolutely no hope. Sorry, okay. RAID 1.
Absolutely stuffed.
RAID 1, we'll get it back off the other one. I'll just look in the mirror. It's on that other drive over there, or those other drives over there. In fact, I've got 6 copies, which means if I break 5 of the mirrors, I get, 35 years bad luck. That's RAID 1. RAID 4 is a distributed RAID method that stores data across 3 or more drives. However, one of the drives is designated as the parity drive. I suppose if you're going to flog that drive really hard, you're going to kill the parrot, or at least the parity drive. So RAID 4 is the point of failure is on the parity drive. RAID 5, the parity is distributed over all of the drives. If we store bits of the parrot everywhere, we should be able to put it back together. RAID 5 has the data capacity storage of N-1 drives. N-1, because we had to give up one to give us the redundancy, so if we lose one, we'll have what we had. That's RAID 5. I don't think RAID 10 is covered in the notes, so I don't think we need to do RAID 10. Any questions?
No, we're just up to 5.
Yeah.
Sorry, did you have a question, Gemma?
No, I'll just self-destruct. It's okay.
I actually thought that Graham was going to self-destruct over here for a moment. He was cracking up over here.
Did you want me to revisit any of those levels a little more slowly? I do concede that I may have gone a bit rapidly. However, there will be a recording
up
on there.
You really think so?
I'll never think of parity the same way again.
Well, that's actually a joke. Why did Long John Silver's parrot keep saying pieces of 7, pieces of 7? Because it had a parity error.
Oh, boom, boom.
Oh dear.
Is this Friday?
No, it's only Wednesday. Anyone wish to have a slower review of RAID?
Kerry, I get confused when they talk about spanning with the different key names that they refer to on the different RAID types, not just the numbers.
RAID 0 is a striped set, RAID 1 is a mirrored set, and RAID 5 is a mirrored set with parity.
Thank you very much.
Okay, unless there's any more questions, we will push on. And you can stop us and ask us about any of the topics that we're covering at any time. You would also be advised to have a look at procedures for backups and types of backups.
What's the differential and the incremental and the environment? No, there's no environmental. What is a differential backup?
Residential.
A detrimental backup, that's the one.
Back up my hard drive, I can't find the reverse switch.
That's right. But yeah, what's the difference between a differential and an incremental? And in fact, how does DOS handle an incremental backup? What does it use to do that?
You are so kind, Kerry.
I don't even have the questions in front of me. I'm talking generally. My PDF browser crashed. I haven't even reopened it.
Okay, no worries. I'll shut my mouth.
No, that wasn't actually deliberate, that one. So, what can I say?
Just
there are
because
certain
Geraldine's hits having fond memories.
Okay, so yes, backups. Yes, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say that based on what you guys are overviewing, if anyone's gone through the 280 questions on the GeoCities that Geraldine posted, they go through a lot of this repetitively.
They do, and it's probably a good idea to do it a couple of times, you know, just before you do your exam to set aside a little bit of time. Those tests on there are excellent for revision.
I mean, I realise, guys, this is a very big test, and there's a lot of information in here, and one of the things we should keep in mind is that this course is essentially an overview of PC support and maintenance, so they're trying to turn you into sort of a level 1 or level 2 PC technician. So it all looks a bit wild. You've actually learnt a lot of the core, if you remember it, that is. I mean, if it dribbles out your ears, we can't do much about that, but if you retain a lot of this, you'll actually retain quite a bit of the information you need to do basic PC repairs and troubleshooting, which is quite useful, except don't tell your relatives or they'll ask you to fix things.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
They don't
it.
Usually
yeah,
offer to pay.
Now, I would also suggest that you understand differences between the IP and MAC address, default gateways, subnet masks, etc., etc., and how they relate to use within the network.
That's an overlap from CCNA, so that shouldn't be too much of a problem.
You also may you need to know your IP config, etc. How you access those commands, etc., you know, where you would use them, all that sort of stuff. Also, I would suggest that troubleshooting is extensively covered, so be aware of ways to start programs, restart programs, shut down programs, all that sort of thing. Go on.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm just scrolling through. I've got a text file open. I'm just scrolling through the exam to give you a bit of a hand here, so I'll catch up with you in a minute.
Okay. Also, the other thing, upgrading operating systems. You'll need to understand the processes thereof and what would be the reasons you would go from one particular operating system in preference to the current one, that sort of thing. You will need to know the differences between operating systems, for example, knowing the differences between Windows 98, 2000, NT, XP, all of those types of questions relating to Windows 9X operating systems.
I've also seen one that talks about how you would put multiple IDE drives into a machine, sort of what you'd do to make that happen.
Also, I'd suggest you be fully aware how to access different programs from your start menu, how to set up your computer to customize it to your own particular needs. You would also need to understand the use of the registry.
When we say the use of the registry, we're talking generally. We don't expect you to know that to change the colour of the start button, it's H key, local machine, current control set, background, desktop, wibble, wibble, colour, and then the hex value is the RGB mask of the colour. That was a non-practical, non-working example. Just generally what the registry is to is used for and what's gets stuck in there. And how it gets put in there, basically, in raw terms, like what things would stick things in there and what things would use it and why you have a registry in the first place. I don't know if anybody remembers the good slash bad old days when we didn't have the registry and we had 27 gazillion.ini files scattered across our hard drive, which if ever any of those ini files exceeded 64k, do not pass go. Do not collect 200 ini files.
Go on, sorry. Go on.
It says in the notes that system.dat and user.dat are used to store the registry in Windows 98. What's used to store the registry in Windows XP?
NTUser.dat and NT... Oh, I can't remember the other one.
Windows System 32 config and all the files without extensions in there.
Basically, you're not going to get that in your test.
Delete at own risk.
And in fact, if you're after doing things to your system that will render it unbootable, Mr. Taylor is, of course, the expert at that, with utilities such as Unlocker, which will unlock a file and allow you to smash it regardless of the consequences. However...
A truly excellent addition to Windows XP.
However, may I warn you that you undertake such things at your own risk, and you do have adequate backups, don't you?
Another entire system on a separate hard drive, will that do?
Yeah, that'll do. Or a virtual machine to play with this stuff on. And just in case, I think we do a little bit of registry editing in the next semester. You would be advised to read the article on the Microsoft Knowledge Base about how to back up the registry. I'll try and dig up an article number, but it's a very popular article, and it tells you how to back up your registry in case you do something. Luckily, you'll be working on virtual machines, so anything you do, if you're running VMware Server, you can take a snapshot before you start having fun. Otherwise, if you're running Player, you can re-unzip your virtual machine, but you'll learn more about the registry than you really wanted to ever know in ITE 2.
I actually modified the settings on one of the virtuals so that at the end, when you've powered it off, it gives you the radio buttons to either refer it to a snapshot, keep a new one, or whatever.
Yeah, you're running Workstation, though, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay,
that Workstation and Player came with it, so yeah, you can do all that.
You can't do it with Player.
No.
But you can do it with Server. A VMware Server will allow you to do the snapshot stuff. But we'll talk about that next week.
Okay, the other things that I see that you may need to do to know about Windows security. Just a general sort of overview of...
what there is, isn't it?
None at all.
Security.
Your level needs to come up, Ian.
What you can do to, provide a certain level of security on your computer, and how
switch
to
your computer
look after files.
Disconnect it from the network.
That's it.
Exactly.
You should also know about the video cards, drivers, software, and how to install and configure.
You'd also want to know about how to install Windows operating systems. In other words, what are the different options for installing them? Do you have to have a blank hard disk, or what sort of thing? You know, what other sorts of options may you have? Just general information about the upgrade paths of various $M operating systems.
Also, you probably need to know about the different types of managers within Windows, what types of utilities are used to manage which particular programs. Also, talking about video cards, I'd also suggest that sound cards might be a good thing to know about.
And if you want to know what the dead silence is, we're all scrolling through the exam looking for things that we should tell you.
That's it. Also, the processes used...
The answer to number 32 is...
That might be too much information.
Think
we've
of
been
how
kind.
Much time you guys could save saying that.
Of course, we could tell you what all the questions are, but unfortunately, if you went up to somebody else's place to fix a machine, the question that they might have might not be one of the ones that you covered in the exam.
We are trying to be very kind here, you know. Okay. As I mentioned before, troubleshooting's sort of fairly well covered. The processes that you go through in the troubleshooting would also be, you know, you need to know those, okay, without giving the question away there.
What was it, Geraldine? Seven steps?
There was seven, wasn't there? There was in yours anyway.
Or of a 12-step, the 12-step program to troubleshoot.
I think Will should tell you what the last, the seventh step was, everybody. Give everybody a laugh.
Was it Skype Kerry and boast about what you did?
That's it.
He never
Kerry,
does that.
Do you have a remote access on the, in these exams?
Nope, no remote access at all. Which question are you down to? Because I'm down to question 20 and I still haven't seen anything new.
21. I'm just started on 21. So just excuse us for the little delays, folks. We're just going through each question.
You might want to know what sort of utilities... You might want to know a little bit about what some of the maintenance utilities are that exist inside of Windows that can check that things are cool and hunky-dory. You might want to know very basically what a few of them do, especially the ones that are mentioned in the course.
You also might want to know a bit about troubleshooting... or booting, you know, startup problems, and the different files that are used in the process. You also probably want to have a look at and review the diagnostic type software.
They actually do ask a question on one of the third-party diagnostic utilities.
You're a good fellow, I don't know.
You also might want to talk about the... you also might want to revisit the advantages of documentation.
I'm not commenting there.
You get paid more for the time spent on it.
some of the memory usage problems you might encounter. Bless you, Gordon.
The other thing you might want to know is what that thing's called when you press those funny buttons and Windows puts all that really big text on the machine and it runs really, really slow, but you can sort of sort stuff out with it.
Yeah, you might want to know about that.
It's not very safe to use, though.
That's right.
I would also suggest that you be very familiar with the disposal of hazardous materials. What methods you'd use. Again, maintenance of equipment.
No, well, this is America and we're all being, you know, enviro.
Composting?
Yeah, that's what you do.
Composting. Yeah, that's it.
No, that's what we do to you if you don't pass the final.
Again, how to look after your hardware. That's another good idea.
Throw it in the pool?
Yeah, that's it. That's how you look after your tower and your monitor, is that correct? Clean it up.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
Make sure you turn it back on while wet.
That's it.
And record the results.
Don't use it. Yeah, don't use it in the shower.
Again, I'd suggest that you be very familiar with the features of different operating systems.
Yes, yeah, certainly. And one of the questions actually deals with the inadequacies of certain operating systems compared to other operating systems.
And no, Vista's not mentioned.
I didn't say total inadequacy.
You should know about upgrading operating systems and why you have a need to do so, or why you may have a need to or a desire to.
These days would be somewhat masochistic.
Because you're ignorant enough to buy a system with Windows ME.
if you still got an Apple One.
I've got a Lisa. No, I know somebody who's got a Lisa. The other thing you might want to know is... Hang on, what's this thing under my cursor here? Oh, yes. What happens when you put really, really, really new, funky hard disks into crusty old computers? What sort of things might go wrong and what might you have to do to get around that?
You've wasted your money hard drive space that you can't see.
Put that jumper on that says pretend to be 32 gigs.
How about the one that pretends to be 2 gig? I've seen those jumpers too.
Okay, certainly you need to have an understanding of adding a new hard drive, SCSI controllers, devices, etc. An understanding of BIOS, CMOS, and errors that can be encountered.
I wonder if they're as bad as the unit questions that just didn't have any common sense to them at all.
The other thing is you should possibly look at when BIOS upgrades are and aren't a good idea.
You also might want to revise partitioning a hard drive.
Yeah, and also you would also want to be looking into the hardware requirements of SCSI, as far as how you set it all up and stuff, what you need to make sure happens. Otherwise, the bits fall out the end.
Yeah, and I would also suggest the you know how to install hard drives, floppy drives, your CD-ROMs and DVDs drives. And also your settings for drives. And it's cold day here, we all need jumpers, so you might want to need know about your jumper settings.
Also various consequences of emancipation and lack of emancipation. There's a little bit cryptic for you there. in fact, it'd be probably useful if you knew the whole course, but obviously these points are the ones that I want to be concentrating on.
Just a little digression, Kerry. None of the screen readers at this present time speaks in Windows Safe Mode, right?
Sorry, I just missed that. You're a bit quiet, Anthony. Something about Windows Safe Mode.
Yes, none of the screen readers speaks in Windows Safe Mode.
That's because you have no sound drivers. If you are running an old version of JAWS under Windows 98, it will talk because it uses SSIL drivers with hardware speech, and that will speak in safe mode. However, nothing else will.
Right.
You may wish to review, or I would if I was you, interrupt requests.
Also, the rules for installing and upgrading memory. What can you do and what can't you do when you can't find two DIMMs that will fit in your computer? No. But what sort of things you can and can't do depending on how the motherboards are set up as far as memory is concerned. The general ones that you just can't break those sorts of rules.
Also, review POST or your power on self-test. You will need to know about that.
You'll also be asked about what sort of features can help safeguard your Windows installation through its turbulent and unhappy life, but may keep it kicking along a little bit longer than otherwise.
Also, you would be advised to review how to boot the system using a DOS disk. And also Windows 9X error log files. Again, we have more questions on troubleshooting, so you do get quite a lot on troubleshooting in this exam.
And you'd also definitely want to know how to figure out what your TCP/IP configuration was under various operating systems.
You also want to know about the troubleshooting tools that you can use for specific faults that you may get.
I think you find that that's exactly right, and especially how you would find out what errors happened previously. Is there a utility that can help you with that?
Also, the system boot problems. The files that would display in those system boot problems. Now I'm being kind.
Familiarity with the system dialog under various operating systems and the tabs it contains would definitely be an advantage.
Again, the use of your system tools, knowing the different type of tools that are available to help you. And how best to use those system tools as well.
Thank you. You have been listening to the Silver Platter edition of the ITE1 final exam. Once you have finished your exam, please place your teacups, plates, mugs and sandwich plates back on your silver platter and put it at the servery hatch for collection. That's the end of the exam, folks. That's essentially what you'll be looking at.
And don't forget, we like cyber chocolates. Now, anything, questions that anyone has, this is your time to ask. Your friendly instructors await your questions with riveted anticipation.
That's right, just call 1-800-MY-FINAL and talk to our hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anybody have any questions specific to the exam? Or does anybody have any questions? I don't want to open it to completely open questions, otherwise everybody else should probably just disconnect from the server. But does anybody have any general questions?
I have a general question. Have you heard about a file called killbbs.bbs?
Yeah, it's a virus, I think.
Because when I open my auxiliary drive, I can right-click, down arrow and press O, or I can right-click, down arrow and open it. But when I select the auxiliary drive and press Enter, I get this message and the hard drive won't open. I don't know how to I have been trying all sorts of things, but I don't know how to rectify it.
I think you had that, Will, didn't you? It's a registry fizzle.
It says, pardon?
Hang on, what did it do? What exactly happens?
It says, cannot open the hard drive because F:// killvbs.vbs is not found or something.
No, I don't think I've had that one.
I can open it in all other ways except by pressing Enter.
That's certainly a registry problem. There was another person who had a problem where whenever they hit Enter on a drive, it would open a search dialog rather than opening the...
I did have that happen. Yeah, I don't know that I ever actually fixed it, though. I think it was a reinstall job, that one.
No, there was a registry fiddle that does fix that particular one. Tabitha did find that. I'll look that one up.
I replaced the class's root extensions, I think, that tree, and it fixed it. I don't know which bit. But basically there's files, there's folders, and there's a whole lot of other definitions apart from .zip or .af or whatever. And it's in amongst there somewhere. I got sort of close to it.
I had a similar problem with .exe files once. And, somewhere in the subdirectory called shell, I was able to fix it through there.
Sorry, what antivirus are you running, Anthony?
No virus is running at the moment.
No. Are you running any antivirus software?
Oh yes, AVG.
Okay. Make sure your virus definitions are fully up to date and do a full system scan in case it picks up something nasty, especially with the external hard drive connected. I don't think that'll be your problem, but it's first solution.
I've passed that stage. I've updated my AVG several times, even yesterday morning.
And did you scan all hard disks by hand, like actually go in and go perform manual scan?
Yes, I did. I picked my external hard drive, which is the F drive, and scanned it separately.
How long have you been having this problem? Because you might want to roll back to a previous restore point.
About a month or so. I can use the disk. I can open it in any other ways, write files into it, extract files, and do everything that you do with a hard drive, except this opening it by pressing enter.
So it's just that drive that does it, the C drive doesn't do it?
No, it's the F drive, it's the external one.
I'd be inclined to go in and obliterate the whole thing out of the device manager and make it re-detect. And I'd probably also smash mounted devices. How's that sound, Kerry? All the stuff in it.
Yeah, there's a registry key called mounted devices that you can knock out, and you can also delete the device from the device manager and re-detect it. I think what this highlights, however, though, is that it's definitely worth having up-to-date and accurate backups of your system on other media. Some of us have got copies of our systems on other hard drives. Some of us have backed our data up on DVDs. And I'd recommend something like Zip Backup, which you can get from www.zipbackup.com, or another backup utility of your choice that you've picked to back these things up. Because eventually your machine will eventually scramble its registry to the point where you will have to reinstall the operating system, and anything, if you don't have your My Documents and things backed up, you can have quite a lot of problems doing that.
And yeah, it's all nice to use a backup utility, make sure you can restore it.
Sorry, what were you saying, Anthony?
I did a Windows repair. I just inserted the Windows repair disk, and did a repair, but it doesn't solve the problem. So the only other alternative, which I don't want to do right now, is to install the entire operating system from scratch.
Well, this is sort of why we say make sure you do have current and up-to-date backups. I can't emphasize that point enough. Anybody here lost data due to a hard disk crash or a Windows corruption?
Yep, mm-hmm. Four times.
Oh, way too many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realise that doesn't help you because the horse is already bolted, so to speak, but once you do get the problem fixed, I would strongly recommend the investigation into some good backup software and keeping some adequate backups. I mean, the answer you've got to ask yourself, and this is relevant to the course, so I'm discussing it here at the moment, how important is your data to you? If it doesn't matter to you, nobody cares, don't bother. If it's not important, doesn't matter, just let it go. But if it is important to you, your data, you've got to figure out what sort of precautions you're going to take, because nobody would hope that your desktop or laptop would be thrown in the swimming pool or you know, something nasty would happen to it. But it is.
I don't know. Graham cleans his that way.
But it is
apparently.
But it is important to figure out how you're going to get. Get that sort of data back in the event of catastrophic failure.
Kerry, how do you mirror the hard drive? It has to be of the same brand and same type, is it?
The mirroring that you can do is a bit tricky because if I'm correct, and I think Chris would know in this, you've actually got to convert a regular disk into a dynamic disk, and once you do that, you limit the sorts of utilities and things that can access it by converting it into a dynamic disk.
There is a clutch.
Yeah, there are about four utilities.
Yeah, go, Chris.
I was just going to say there are just about four utilities that you can't run once you mirror the image of that data, because the, especially if the data, like I mirrored on my server, that you will, especially if it's damaged and you mirror it over, you're going to have a problem restructuring any of it, and I've had to go back bit control trying to retrieve some of that data. So be very careful if you're mirroring anything.
Also, mirroring to an external USB drive is exceedingly slow and will slow your computer down unacceptably. I would be using something like Acronis TrueImage or Ghost or Zip Backup or one of the other utilities to actually copy that data off and put it somewhere, or preferably find a method of backing data up onto removable media such as DVDs. It's all too easy for a hard drive to start making marble in paint tin noises, and that's the end of it. Anyone else got any questions?
So do we talk to Ian to have the exams posted, Kerry?
Yeah, if you email, it'll get to him if you email Cavi Instructors, but if you email i.murray at Curtin, he will put the exams up for 8 hours from when he actually clicks the buttons to put them up, and you've got 8 hours to do them. The exam is 3 hours long, so make sure you've got your cup of coffee, tea, whatever it is that makes you happy, and see how you go with that. It's definitely one of those things that you sort of sit back, preferably not relax, but sit in there for the long haul, because it is quite a long exam. I think you'll find, however, in raw terms, that compared to the CCNA final, the ITE final is a walk in the park. You're not sort of having to count collision zones out of diagram descriptions and turn your head inside out. So I've just been looking through the exam, and although I usually get virtually smacked out for saying things like this, in relative terms, the ITE exam is actually a lot easier than the CCNA one.
It is. It just covers a broader area. Well, sort of broader topic for you to review. But we've given you a very good structured heads up today.
Kerry, now I'm not taking the exam this time because I couldn't log in correctly and there are all sorts of things. Do I have to wait till the next end of the next semester, or supposing I'm really somewhere in between, can I take the exam at that time?
No. No. You can do it any time, Anthony.
Pardon me, General?
You can do the exam at any time. When you feel you're ready, you just let us know and we'll post the exam.
Okay, thank you. That's nice.
You're welcome.
We aim to please. We don't always succeed, but we aim to.
We want you all to succeed. Anything we can do to help.
Curtin seems to be very lenient. Curtin seems to be very lenient. The universities that I went to here are, bedrocks, I should think. Put up a wall in your path.